Hey, Phil here. Before we get into the episode, I just wanted to hop in real quick and let you know that this episode of the 70% Complete podcast was recorded for video. It's not something we plan to do all the time, but some of the stuff that Logan gets into, along with a late episode reveal, works better in video when he can draw on a whiteboard. Spoilers for where the conversation goes. I think the episode still stands as audio only, but you will need to do a little bit of conjuring in your mind of some whiteboard scribbles to get the full effect. Also, this is technically our 50th episode of the podcast, so whether this is your first episode or your 50th, thanks for hanging out. We super appreciate it. For real, for real. Okay, now, back to what you're really here for. The tangents.
Wow, they keep making Discord fucking annoying to look at, huh? It's just...
Yeah.
Just I don't need suggested activities. I don't want you to tell me to play Putt Party. Live, although we already are live, so
we are.
This is your problem later, I guess, isn't it? So this is my thought. Is, you know, I'm not really sure if I have a thought. my potential thought is I have like 9 different cold opens that make sense to me, and I will perhaps select 2 of them.
Okay.
And then we're just gonna
go.
We're just gonna fucking yeah.
Just
we'll see what happens.
A raw ass two dudes podcast and podcast episode.
Yeah. But now there's video for few reasons.
Okay.
Mostly because some things I want to talk about with computer science are really fucking hard.
Yeah.
To do without a visual aid,
sure.
Which we've noticed. And I feel like those segments have seemed to go over well.
Yeah.
Historically.
Yeah, they have.
And we reference them frequently.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought I would do some more of those. Also, I think it's neat, and it's something I'm okay at some of the time.
Yeah.
So we're going to do, I think I want to do like our mundane curiosity as a cold open.
Oh, God.
Because I feel like that is on brand with where I'm going. I don't need you to have one.
Okay.
That's fine.
You go
I
first.
Can just have one.
And then I will maybe piggyback off of yours if I can have one.
Okay.
I forgot about this segment entirely.
See, this is great because I feel like I get jump scared by the bright spot, which I told you about.
Yeah. That's your like, fault.
We do it some of the time.
Yeah.
Somewhat regularly. But yeah, we stole it also.
Yeah.
So like, I feel a little weird about it. Because we did steal it, it's just a whole cloth from Knowledge Fight,
yeah.
Which I feel like we try to point out somewhat regularly. But it's like a positive thing, which is not what my brain does
exactly
without encouragement.
Yeah.
So that makes me feel a little better about it. But fuck that, is what I say. I think people need to be more curious, and I think we're going to demonstrate that regularly. And I feel like we would be in a lot better place if people thought about things more often.
Cosine.
But that's hard to do.
Yes.
That's like super hard to do. And you kind of have to structure your life in a way that it happens. So that's what we're going to talk about today.
All right.
Amongst other things. So we're gonna start with a mundane curiosity that I had, which is, when you are playing the drums, why do we see people cross their arms on the hi-hat and on the snare drum?
Mm-hmm.
They're both right there.
Yeah.
It seems like this is entirely unnecessary. Do you know why?
Is to make it look cool?
It is not to make it... Well, it was not originally to make it look cool.
Okay.
And in some ways, it still isn't. So hi-hats did not always exist.
Mm.
Makes sense.
Yep.
they're later than a lot of the other drums and a lot of the other cymbals, which also makes sense. You would have to have a cymbal before you had the idea to take two of them and build a big chain drive mechanism to clap them together.
That's true.
Like, that's that's clearly a progression thing.
Yeah.
So when you just have one big ride cymbal and a snare drum, and your snare drum is in front of you, and you're playing the snare drum, and your ride cymbal is over here off to the right.
Yeah.
You learn how to play cymbal sounds with your right arm, and you learn how to play snare rhythms with your left arm. So then once we have a hi-hat, and we don't have anywhere to put it, and it ends up right over the snare drum,
yep.
Now you either have to relearn all new things with your left and your right arm,
mm-hmm.
or you take that vocabulary you have developed with your right side, cross it over the top, and now you can play the exact same pattern you already know in the exact same way.
That's really good.
The downside is now you're a little twisty guy.
Yeah.
And you gotta do other stuff because of that.
Yeah. Is this
But that's why.
Is that the cymbal arms race in drums then? Like once you have a normal ride and then you have your hi-hat, like now we're in the it looks cool territory to be hitting on the hi-hat and then whip back to hit another cymbal behind you. Like that's why that happens, right?
I mean, there's definitely like some theatrics involved.
Sure.
For sure. And that'll change depending on like player and genre. But also traditionally you're gonna learn from another person.
Mm.
And that person probably learned from someone who crossed their arms.
Yep.
And therefore, now you cross your arms because that's how they do it.
Amazing.
So there is that. And then, so what I'm doing right now is I'm trying to learn to be more ambidextrous.
Anecdotal evidence. Or?
Drumming.
Okay.
I guess a little bit of both. Have we talked about my confusing handedness before?
No.
Oh.
What does that mean?
So I write right-handed.
Yep.
I golf left.
Okay.
I bat both almost equally, and I kick right, and I bowl right.
Huh. Okay.
What I have been told that when I was very, and obviously I don't know if this is true because I was an infant. I've been told when I was very young I would pick things up in my left hand. And someone around me would then take them out of my left hand,
mm-hmm.
and put them into my right hand to get me using the right hand more.
Huh.
I don't know if that's true or not, but I do a lot of things like kind of halfway towards each. But I also, this I know you do know,
yes,
tippy tap my hands 100% of the time that I am conscious,
yep.
as a human being. And I have learned a lot of simple patterns with my right hand by doing that. So I unfortunately do have vocabulary built up in each hand.
Interesting.
Relative to hi-hat and snare, even though I've not played the drums that much.
Yep.
But the earlier you try to make that switch, the easier it is. And all this is like dependent on the way you set up the drums too. Like if you look at Danny Carey's setup, the drummer for Tool,
mm-hmm.
His hi-hat's in the middle.
I mean, he's just weird in general. But
yeah, like that guy's brain works different, obviously. but there's a lot of it's all very dependent and very personal, and it's better if you can do everything equally with both hands.
Yeah,
that opens up a lot of possibilities.
Sure,
but it is more work also, because now you have to develop that same vocabulary on both sides. And the thing I'm learning is I tie my hands and my feet together in my head.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to think of things split on a hemisphere,
yep.
and not split by limb,
yeah.
which is where I need to get to. So I am used to doing the kick drum with my right foot relative to what my right hand is doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that tracks.
So when when you switch the hands, now suddenly my kick drum is doing dumb shit.
Yeah.
It's still happening relative to the right, but the right is now the snare drum and not the hi-hat.
I don't like that.
Yeah. Yeah. but it makes your brain do different things. And I think that's cool. That's kind of the whole point of existing in a lot of ways. So, which we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, that's the topic of the day.
Hey, everyone. This is the AI episode you asked for, by the way. It's not going to be what you think it is, and it's going to take months.
Yeah, an episode is in the most, like, scare quotes of all time. Like, is it an episode or is it more of a module?
I don't really know.
A way of life?
Exactly what this is going to be. Yeah, it's closest to that, I think. Like, you and I talk off mic more than we talk on, I would say.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
You know, a fair bit. So you're privy to a lot of the ideas I have put together and then subsequently scrapped before they ever see the light of day.
Yeah.
And this is the culmination of a lot of those, I feel like.
Yeah. I feel like when you, just like some real behind the scenes stuff, I got a picture.
Yeah, go for it. This is going to be parasocial as fuck.
Yeah.
So let's just fucking do this, and maybe I'll have you send this to me before you post it, and I'm gonna watch it and make sure I'm still cool.
Okay.
Does that work for you?
Yeah, that works.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
So we've talked about doing an episode on almost all of the topics that we are going to talk about now and in the future, and it is a weird meandering path that I think makes a lot of logical sense to both of us. And we have talked about it, but it wasn't until I received a full screen of a whiteboard photograph probably 3 or 4 days ago now that I was like, oh, this is going to be real.
Oh, yeah. No, my mind's broken.
Yeah, you went from 0 to 100 on this real damn fast. You went from 0 to 100... incredibly slow, and then you went from 0 to 99 really slow over the past like several months, and then 99 to 100 happened in like 3 days.
Yeah, and in some ways 0 to 99 took 30 years by like a lot of metrics.
It's a real
it's cool because no one knows what we're talking
about. It's a real Zeno's paradox if you think about it. Like perhaps we will never reach 100, and that is the point of the episode.
Yeah, we're doing asymptotes now. Yep. we're going to start with binary search, which has almost nothing to do with what we're going to talk about after we do binary search.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been threatening to teach you about binary search for like 2 years and other things. So we're just going to do that. And maybe this will be part of the episode, or maybe it'll be some other thing.
Yeah.
Or maybe it'll get cut.
Yeah.
All of this, I guess I will say, is going to be rough and a work in progress, but that is part of the point. I think as we are seeing, society, I was going to say evolve, but we're going to go with change.
Yeah.
And habits change, and tech companies not really change, but just go harder in the paint than before.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to see an increased value being placed on process over product.
Yeah.
We are a very outcome product driven society. And I am as well. Like my brain loves that. It loves binary states. It does not like continuums. It wants switches to flip. And I want to look at only outcomes.
Yep.
And that's like not a good way to be a person, I think.
Broadly. Yeah.
Fundamentally.
Yeah.
It's like a good way to make a widget.
Yeah.
But if your goal is to not make a widget, if your goal is to be a person, I think we need a different approach. So we're going to look at some of those things, too.
Yeah.
But first, binary search.
Binary search.
If you're, like, taking an exam, don't watch this for that.
Yeah, live to
That's
tape,
That's not
folks.
What this is going
to
be.
This is the cliff notes of the cliff notes.
And I don't do this anymore at all. You don't handwrite binary search after school because there's a module or something that does binary search, or a method already built into the programming language that does binary search. So you just say binary search, go.
Yeah.
But we're going to look at it. So we have some boxes. This is our array. Have we talked about arrays as a data structure?
No, but I'm going to try to remember here, but basically it's 10, right? 10 units of, no, it's 9. It's 9. Oh, 10 with a 0. Yep.
This one's 10. It can be any number.
It can be any number. Okay. Is this the...
It's frequently quite large.
Okay. Because isn't this the thing where you chunk binary code into segments, right?
No.
No.
This is different. Okay. That is... We'll come back to that later.
Okay.
A different... Okay. That's a different thing. We'll just say that's a different thing.
It's a different thing. Now. Okay.
So data structures are a way to organize information.
Mm-hmm.
I have, like... a pretty deep curiosity and love of information encoding and ways that meaning is imparted just in the way that we encode information
mm-hmm.
and communicate it. So not the actual thing itself, but the everything around it.
I mean, this feels like a
the message.
Yeah.
If we want to go to like a film school kind of thing.
Yeah. This feels like a throwback to the discussion we had literally last week about music theory and how like music is the way that we currently do music is just a specific way that we have all decided is how we do it,
yeah.
but is like completely made yeah. up and fabricated.
Yeah. And like, I probably gave music theory a short shrift cause I'm a little mad at it sometimes,
that's fine.
But it is a tool. It is an excellent tool
mm-hmm.
for certain things and it's not excellent for other things.
Yep.
It's a language really in a lot of ways, but this is not. This is a data structure.
Mm-hmm.
This is more simple. So an array, we have a series of boxes here.
Mm-hmm.
And boxes can hold things.
Containers.
And you'll see each of our boxes,
yep.
they've got a number.
Yep.
So now we can refer to the box by the number because we don't know what's going to go in the box.
Right.
We've just made boxes. So I'm going to put stuff in the boxes.
Oh, God. Let's. Oh no, he's putting numbers within the numbered boxes.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, two
that
digit,
sucks, doesn't it?
Yeah, 2-digit numbers within the boxes. That's a real pain in the ass. Oh, jeez. Okay. Yep. So we got boxes here. We got numbers within the boxes, and we have the boxes labeled by numbers.
Yeah. So there's a couple things here. So array numbering, this is a whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Do arrays start at 0 or do arrays start at 1?
Classic, does the week start at Sunday
this
or
is,
Monday?
Yeah, do Balrogs have wings? this array starts at 0. That's what we're going to do.
Okay.
You're just going to have to come to terms with that. If you're an array starts at 1 person, I'm sorry, this one's going to be at 0.
Yep.
There's like math reasons why you might prefer one or the other. And there are also just like human brain reasons why you might prefer one or the other.
Okay.
It'd be cool if we could just pick one and stick there, but
we can't.
Yeah, we can't. Yeah. So this one starts at 0. And then we have a list of numbers. They are in ascending order. So they are sorted
mm-hmm.
and they are not continuous. But they could be, we don't know. So when we're doing algorithms, which is what this is,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to teach you an algorithm. Typically, we don't know exactly what we're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
Like an algorithm, if I say, hey, find me the number 44.
Yep.
And we look over here and we see in box 5 is the number 44.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we knew that this was what was going to be in the boxes all the time, you could just say, oh, go to box 5
yeah.
every time, and I'll get a 44. But that's not how any of this works in real life.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've set up is a situation where we're not going to know the numbers in here. For binary search to work, they do have to be sorted.
Okay.
If they're not sorted, it doesn't work. If you have random nonsense, you have to put it in order first.
Okay.
And also, a lot of the stuff we're going to talk about here on the board is going to be pretty simple.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're going to look at 10 boxes.
Yeah.
But in real life, we don't know how many boxes there are going to be.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's going to be 3 billion boxes.
Yeah, of course.
So the things that you designed to work on 10 and the things that you designed to work on 3 billion are sometimes not the same.
Yep.
So the idea is if we're given an unknown number of boxes to put numbers in, and all we know is that we have boxes, they have numbers in them, and they're sorted.
Yep.
So now what we want to do is figure out which box the number we're looking for is in.
Yep.
So we're going to say we're looking for 44.
Yep. We need to find 44.
We need to find 44. So the naive implementation of this would be to go to box 0 mm-hmm. and see if there's a 44 in it.
Yep.
And if there's not,
move to the next.
We go to box 1.
Yeah.
And we just keep, and we do that. And then once we find a 44,
yep.
we stop and we say, oh, right there.
Yeah.
Box 5. Again, if we have 10 boxes, that's a fine way to do it.
Sure.
It doesn't matter. Computers are like really good at doing those kind of comparisons very quickly. That takes zero amount of time.
Yep.
Even if we have to go all the way to the last box,
yeah.
that still takes functionally zero amount of time. But if there's 5 billion boxes,
yeah. it's going to take some time.
And the thing's in the last one, or it's not there at all, because sometimes that'll happen. You'll say, oh, we want to find 62. The only way to do that with our first method is to look in all the boxes
yep.
and get to the last box and go, yeah, there wasn't a 62 in here. Or I guess we would go until we found a number greater than 62 and then stop.
Right.
Would be the other option.
Because they have to
but
be
we
sorted.
Can't guarantee that'll happen either. Yeah. Maybe we're looking for 5 billion and one. Like this last box, instead of being 55, could be 5 billion.
Yep.
And that would be a totally reasonable way to do that. So instead, we're going to write an algorithm.
Okay.
We're going to come up with a smart thinky way to do this faster without having to know what's in the boxes
yep.
and without having to know how many boxes there are.
Okay.
Does that track?
I am ready to do this. I don't even know if I know where to start.
Yeah, I didn't either. You're not supposed to.
Okay.
Because this isn't how your monkey brain works.
Correct.
This is how a computer works. And you have to slam your head into a wall for at least 3 semesters until this makes any sense,
okay.
I feel like. But once it does, it's really cool.
Okay.
And then you find out, like, a lot of this stuff was figured out 70 years ago.
Yeah.
By paper, by a bunch of people at IBM, who are like, well, eventually the chip will be fast enough to try it this way, I think.
Amazing.
Yeah, like a lot of our database design, a lot of that stuff dates back to like the 60s and 70s.
Incredible.
And holds true, because it's math.
Yeah.
And the math works.
Right.
They just didn't have the chips to do the math
to
fast
need
enough.
To do the math that way. Just for a little bit of color as you do some drawing here,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if I ever got to the level of math in school where I was doing algorithms. I topped out at a... Where did I top out? I never took calculus, actually. I never did calculus math. I was always in the geometric and the trigonometric spaces.
Yeah, triangles are cool.
Mm-hmm.
Triangles are very cool. We'll do some triangle stuff eventually. This gets closer to like most of computer science dips into like linear algebra.
Oh, yeah. I can do that.
Yeah. Like matrix multiplication.
Yeah.
We'll probably talk about matrix multiplication later today.
Oh, actually. Yeah. That stuff I can.
Perhaps.
I could fumble my way through doing it again after I haven't done it in 15 years.
Okay. So we're going to create a couple of variables to help us out here
mm-hmm.
that we're going to keep track of as we go.
Okay.
We have our left. We're going to make a list over here too, I guess.
All right. Left. Uh-oh. Right. Left equals, right equals, center equals. Okay.
Center equals.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So when we start, when we get to our first loop, we want to figure out where the middle of this thing is, what the middle box is.
Oh, okay.
So in order to do that, we're going to say, okay, left, we're going to start all the way to the left.
Yep.
That's going to be a 0.
Makes sense.
Right, we're going to start all the way to the right. Looks like that's a 9.
Yep.
Okay. Midpoint formula. Do we remember Descartes? This is all the same thing. If we want to find the middle of a thing, we take both ends.
Yep.
We add them together.
Divide by two. Easy peasy.
Yeah. So we have 0 plus 9 is 4.5.
Uh-oh.
So we don't have a 4.5 box.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer. So now we have to round.
Okay.
So the cool thing about the way binary search works is it doesn't matter which way you round as long as you do it that way every time.
Okay.
So we're going to round down.
Yeah.
Because I just picked.
Yeah.
So four. Four becomes our center.
Okay.
So now we know four is center. So again, we're looking for number 44.
Yep.
So we're going to go to box four. So now let's, here, let me, I should probably be doing this with like seven different colors. I don't have that many markers.
I mean, Expo only makes four colored markers, so.
Maybe we'll get more markers as this goes. If people don't hate this. Okay, so center is box four. Yep. We look in box four. It's 26.
Yeah, that's not 44.
That is not 44.
Nope.
But we've learned more things than just what's in box four. By doing
we know that 0 through 4 is less than 44, so we can ignore them.
Exactly.
Yes.
Screw all those boxes. We don't need them. So, now that we know our box does not have a number that's big enough, we know we need to go to the right of where we are currently. So, we're going to do this whole LRC thing a second time.
Oh. So, 4 becomes
now,
left.
Four becomes left. Right stays the same.
Yep.
Because we don't know what's down there.
Yep.
And we start over again. So now we have 4 plus 9. 13. Plus 9. Divided by 2.
It's 6.5.
6.5. We round down in this house.
To 6.
So 6.
Yep.
So now we know center is now
6.
6.
Oh, okay. This is fun. Okay.
Now this is fun. Yeah. Yeah. I love this.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we go to box six and we look in box six. Box six holds the number 45, which is bigger than 44,
correct,
which is what we're looking for.
Yep.
So.
Fuck them. Six,
yeah,
six and up, done.
Six and up. Yeah. Now we know these are not useful.
Yep.
So what do we do next?
So we would do left, right, center. But left, right, center would all equal 5, right?
So now
I guess
we know
right would be 6.
Yeah, yes. We're going to keep... I think there's probably a couple different ways we could slightly do this.
Mm-hmm.
And again, as long as you keep it the same, it's fine. I feel like right would go...
Does right...
You know, I should have checked my notes and not done this off the dome. That's okay. We'll put right at center and see what happens. This is part of the process.
Of the process.
We're learning together. Because
yeah.
I have not done this in a long time.
Again, the point.
Yeah, I suppose I could see if... Yeah, doesn't matter.
Because, so previous
We'll just say this is the way it works.
Yeah, previous left was 4, but we know that it is more than 4 because that was our... center last time.
Yeah.
So we would it still be,
I should probably just check, shouldn't I? So
you could
we
check.
Know if we move,
this is an easy problem to solve because we only have 10 boxes, so you can fudge it really easy. But again, back to the like 3 billion record.
Okay, so we do increment. You are correct.
Okay. So center first time was 4, but since we know that it can't be 4,
it should have
been 5.
Left should have been 5.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Correct. And then that...
So now we know left and right are both there. So once left and right are in the same spot, you can just look in that box. We don't need to find center. We know we're at center.
Yep.
And in this case,
we did it.
There is a 44 there.
Yeah.
But if we were looking for 43,
yep,
instead of 44, we would have gotten just as far,
mm-hmm,
and we would still come to the same endpoint, but then we know there's no 43.
Right. Okay. Yep.
Because there'd have to be another box.
Yep. That makes sense.
So there is... Yeah. So what this does from, like, a time standpoint is your first move cuts the list in half.
Mm-hmm.
And then every subsequent move cuts the list in half.
Yep.
So you are examining... like the square of of the, or the square root of the array mm-hmm. every time. Like that's getting proportionally smaller in a nonlinear fashion every time.
Okay. And so it's, I guess the other assumption here, right? So in order for this to work, you need to have an array of data. They have to be sorted in ascending order. And you...
It will work descending also.
That makes sense.
But typically we put things in ascending order just because of brain
things. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then because you're dealing with that, it would have to be a finite data source and you'd have to know the beginning and the end.
Yeah, which isn't hard. Like basically any programming language that's going to allow you to build an array like this mm-hmm. will have a function to say how big is it.
Okay.
And you're going to know the first box is 0 or 1 depending on what language you're yep. in.
Okay.
And then you'll do the thing that says so what really happens from like a code standpoint is you're going to say L equals 0, R equals array dot size usually.
Okay.
And this is built into the language.
Yep.
And this says go to the very end, see what number it is, put the number here.
Yep. Okay.
So this is actually 9.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, that's wild. Like even if you had a thing that was 10 records long, you would still have done it in 3 moves yeah. instead of 5, 6. Yeah.
Yep. And if we let's do a slightly different one quick. Let's say we're looking for the number 99.
Mm-hmm.
In this same thing.
Yep.
Well, that cap is on the floor. Nice. We'll see if I crush it.
It's gone forever.
So we know left is 0. We know right is 9. We did this earlier, so we know center is 4.
Mm-hmm.
We look in box 4. We have a 26.
Yep.
That is too small.
Yep.
So we know we have to go this way. So then left becomes 5, because I did it right this time.
Yep.
And then we have 5 plus 9 is 14, divided by 2 is 7. Ooh. So center goes here.
Nice and round.
That number is 50.
Yep.
That's still less than 99. We got to go right further. So now we move our left. Now we have 8 plus 9 is 17, divided by 2. Wow, well, these are the same number.
Yep.
So center goes here. We look in this box. It's not big enough. We go again. We end up here. It's not big enough. Typically what happens then is the whole thing will return a -1,
mm-hmm.
depending on, because there's not, it returns, the idea is we're going to return the number of the box, and there is no -1 box.
I see. Okay.
-1 in computer science and data structures frequently is there to communicate to you that the thing didn't work
the way
you had hoped it would work.
But
it didn't find the
thing. But like successfully completed its search, I guess.
But it did the thing. Yeah. It just didn't find
yep.
it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Which again, that's an information encoding thing. Like -1 doesn't mean -1 in this case. It means result not found.
Yep. Yeah. Huh.
Because we know there isn't a -1 box because it starts at 0 or it starts at 1.
Yep.
And there's never any way for it to be less than that.
Right.
So in this case, yeah, we did it in like what, four moves instead of 10.
Yep.
We would have to do 10 to know that by just going from 0 up.
And I'm assuming that what we're looking at here, we have boxes with numbers in them, but those containers could contain anything. So
they could contain anything.
The simple yeah. solution here of, you know, get box 9 to discover that it, like your right would only ever equal 55 just to null out the search mm-hmm. is like not really, like it's viable for this, but not for something else.
It needs to, yeah, it needs to have something comparable
mm-hmm.
because we need to look in the box and be able to tell is that bigger or smaller than the thing we're looking for
yeah.
or is it the thing we're looking for? But you could have a different data structure where this 55 is a Wendy's 6 blocks away
yeah.
and we're going to use this to help find your route to get to Wendy's.
Right.
Or a bunch of other things. Like maybe we'll probably get into, I don't know if we'll get into like directed acyclic graphs or something at some point that actually does navigation, but maybe we will. I don't know. This also works Maybe we'll do binary trees. That's maybe a thing you've heard of before.
Yeah, that sounds right.
We'll do that. We'll do that next time.
Okay.
We're not going to invert one. Don't worry, anyone. But
inverted binary okay. trees.
Yeah, that's for.
Yeah. Is that 202?
Yeah. Oh no.
No.
No. I mean, this was like. I guess we did this in data structures. I think we did binary search in data structures. We'll come back. We're going to reference this a bunch of times because you can do sorting this way.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll do that. We'll do that a different day, and then we'll do a binary tree.
Okay.
So we'll have a search method, a sorting method,
mm-hmm.
and a storage method that are all related to this same look at the thing. Is it bigger or smaller
yep.
concept?
Okay.
And then I'm not planning past that yet.
I mean, we already have a 6-month curricula at least.
Yeah. So all of that preamble is for what? Because people said they wanted an AI episode.
Oh, right. Yep.
That's what we're here for. I started. Look, the second I said, hey, should we do an AI episode? Before my words had reached the microphone, I had regretted that statement.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, it's not a thing I should have said. Because, nope. like, one or two people will say yes.
And that'll be enough.
And that's all my brain needs to think that I have to do.
Yep.
So I started that, and you and I talked about it a bit. And I started prepping for that, and I was like, oh, this is not like a one-episode thing.
No.
And I don't have the technical expertise to stay current with AI or the time. I have a job that isn't doing that
yep.
and other commitments. So then the method became like, okay, well, let's talk about AI without having to talk about the specifics, because I think that's a trap.
Yes. Yeah. I think the trap is both like the specifics of how it works and the specific outputs. As of right now, also.
Yes, examining certain models, mm-hmm. training methods, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Is super useful, but like we're just people talking shit.
Yeah. Also, I think that if you are listening to this show, odds are you probably know what our opinions on artificial intelligence are.
That's still going to be clear at the end
yeah,
of the
story. Yeah, we'll make it quite clear, but like I don't think we need to dig into the granularities of it. And instead use it as a launching off point. I like where you have yeah. this thing pointed instead of explaining what an LLM is at length.
Yeah. And we're going to do some of that mm-hmm. too. Like we're going to talk about some of the specifics. But a lot of the issues I have with AI aren't about the specifics. Let's back up. Mm-hmm. What the fuck does that word mean? What does AI mean?
Yeah.
We do not have a shared understanding by any means.
No.
With any of the people who are talking about this regularly. So that's kind of fraught already. That's like trying to describe a fish.
Mm-hmm.
It does not have a good, clean definition. We all just kind of vibe it out. And I think, the way we vibe that out is mostly wrong because we've watched a lot of sci-fi
yeah.
where AI does a lot of really cool stuff all at once, all by itself. That's like not what the consumer stuff we have access to does.
No.
So that's part of my hang up is a language thing. And I think that what we call AI and what the companies who are selling what they call AI, those aren't the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the people who actually make AI, that's an entirely third thing than what we think of and what is being sold.
Yep.
So we're going to ignore some of that because that's really hard and that's going to be like, I don't know, a 3-semester course on its own.
Yeah.
But the way that AI is being sold, really sets off my bullshit detector to an undeniable degree. So I thought, okay, cool. I'll explain that. I'll explain why the way we talk about these things seems squishy to me at best.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, that really only works if you already intrinsically think that my bullshit detector is well tuned.
Sure.
And you and I talk about these things constantly. Yeah. So that's a shorthand I can use with you.
Yeah.
I can be like, hey, I think this is some bullshit. Yeah. And I don't typically say that unless I really think it. So I have kind of landed on using AI to discuss how to build a bullshit detector.
Okay.
I think is maybe the shorthand of where this goes.
I like that.
It's going to be like 70% that, and then I think it's going to end up being like 30% just life philosophy stuff.
Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. I think those things are very closely connected at some points, so it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And again, this is going to be a work in progress. I would love to sit down and like actually put this together as a curriculum and do this in what my head thinks is the right way, which is has to be nearly perfect.
Yeah.
But that's like, that'll never happen.
Yeah, we would never sit down to do that.
No, I have other things to do.
Yeah.
I have to go to work and like eat and sleep and stuff.
Yeah.
So that sucks. And also like, let's just barrel headlong into the parasocial bullshit mm-hmm. here. I am like a perfectionist in a horrible way, I feel like.
Okay. I generally agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say I'm very happy to get your opinions through all of this. Good, bad, contradictory to what I say. Especially contradictory to what I say. I think I'm unfortunately very self-aware of these things, though, and that's part of my problem. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how different you think.
Yeah.
I frequently have the ability to see a very good product on the outside, like at the end of this process, before the process has started.
Yeah.
And I think that product is usually something I could attain in like a lab setting.
Yeah.
This is how I used to talk about Wi-Fi to people. Be like, the number it says on the box that it can transmit, that's like, that's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
That's based on the math. That's if we are in a sterile room with controlled humidity and no interference, and like everything is just set up perfect for this thing to push data from here to there.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll get that number. And I think that's how I approach everything,
mm-hmm.
unfortunately. Like, not just our creative output, everything. That's not how brains are, or the world.
Yeah.
We don't get to work in under those conditions very often, if ever.
Yep.
So in some ways, this is me using all of you to continue my march towards being a functional human and not like a binary state machine that needs everything to be 0 or 100.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that makes a lot of sense. At least like using it as an impetus to like just get out there and say the damn thing. And then, I mean, I think this is kind of core to how you and I work together, is that oftentimes we will go back and forth and talk about these things, and it feels very much like we are testing ideas back and forth, and then the ideas and the discussions evolve as we go. And I mean, I push back a little bit on the doing it in a lab situation, because I feel like if you were to ever sit down in a lab to do this entire thing as a curriculum, it still would never happen. Like, that to me, like,
oh, probably not. No.
Yeah, that's just how this stuff works. Like, you would just spend your time spinning on other parts of this, and I think that it is like the scope would ever evolve.
Yeah, I guess specifically in this context, a lab setting means fixing my brain chemistry.
Oh well, yeah. I mean, that's also, yeah, well,
yeah, yeah. That's why I said this is not
a lab, a real laboratory. I see.
Yeah, yeah. Like, the hardware can technically do mm-hmm. it, I guess, is my point.
Yeah.
But the software's never going to get
it. No, no. But I think that a lot of the stuff that you have on that, the whiteboard of doom that I have seen, that is not the one behind you mm-hmm. currently. I think a lot of...
Sure isn't. Couldn't be.
Couldn't be.
Look at it. It's empty.
It's empty. I think a lot of that stuff is just... Like, ultimately, I think it comes through conversation. And like that... You know, talking about like life philosophy and stuff like that from you know, earlier, that is like the core of philosophy in my mind, is like, you know, it's much more rigid when you think about like capital P philosophy, but it is testing premise against another premise and seeing like how strong the logic is on that. So I think that that's kind of what I love about this specifically.
Look, we were leading up to a dramatic moment, and I'm going to ruin it real quick because we're going to talk about philosophy when you say that.
Okay.
I like philosophy a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think people tend to have a different conception of what it is than what I have experienced taking philosophy courses.
I think that's fair.
And then doing self-study on my own. As you pointed out, it's like this very rigid thing, and it's not. No, it's all done in discourse. It's all done in dialogue. A huge amount of it is history. A huge amount of it is culture, and like a lot of the pieces that have survived that we still place great value on are weirdos at the time talking to other weirdos about really specific stuff. Mm-hmm. Like it's not. Like reading, do I have something nearby? Probably. Like Descartes's not writing for you.
No.
Like people get frustrated when they read philosophy because it's like, why can't you just say the fucking thing using human words? This is dumb. You're talking in circles at best. Fuck this, I'm out.
Yep.
And I think that's a totally reasonable reaction, and it is one I have had frequently. And sometimes it is applicable. Like not everyone who's written a book on philosophy has something worth saying.
Yep.
But I think you need to approach it the same way you would approach like a microbiology paper or any other published academic work where it's like, oh, this is a text written for an audience that assumes a lot of knowledge that I don't have.
Yep.
So we need to approach it differently. And I'm not going to understand it. That's part of it. The other part of it is you're trying to use words to describe things we don't have words for.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't also like really have the brain structure for sometimes. Like we use words pragmatically. And ultimately I want to end this as a pragmatist. So we're not going to spend like a ton of time being rigid and dogmatic about stuff because I don't think that's very useful.
Yep.
And a lot of my like capital P philosophy ideas have very little impact on my day-to-day life because they're not functional.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, let's continue here. I'm not sure causality is real.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how we prove that in a way that I find super definitive.
Sure.
I'm not entirely sure that free choice is real or not. But I act like I think it is.
Yeah.
I still look before I cross the street.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll separate some of these things into like, here's the like dumb theory thing in my head.
Yeah.
But also like if you're a person who has a job and has to wear pants, like look before you cross the street because you might get hit by a car.
Yeah.
Like I just. So we're going to separate some things there. So this, we got to this point from me trying to sketch this out once I remembered I had a whiteboard that was for more than just work. I was like,
that's true.
I will dump my head onto this whiteboard and then I will be able to look at it before I forget all of it. And I'll be able to figure out a way to structure this so I can communicate my dumb ideas to
them. Yeah.
That was my plan. And that quickly turned into like, what if we just looked at the whiteboard? Because I don't know if it's going to get better than this without some dialogue.
Uh-huh.
So we have the whiteboard.
We do have the whiteboard.
We do have the whiteboard.
No, don't you do it.
It will change.
Oh. This is the scary whiteboard.
This is the scary whiteboard.
Oh boy.
It'll probably change a lot as we go.
Yeah. Oh boy.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
It is going to change a lot. I mean, I wouldn't have written it like this if I thought I was going to show this to anyone other than
Yeah.
But I was like, do I rewrite all of it? Nah, fuck no. That. We're not called 100%.
No, it's 70% complete. As you can tell, I wrote this 70% as fast as I wanted to, and that's where we go.
Yeah, this was created to get ideas onto the page before they left my head, because that is a problem I have often.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Wow.
Man. This is way scarier now that we're just looking at
yeah,
it.
Yeah, like, do you just pick
with
one?
With the record button going. Maybe. So, I want to start here first. Here are a couple of axioms mm-hmm. that I have written at the top and below
yep.
that I think you and I will come back to. And these are things you and I have discussed, maybe word for word, in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is more complicated than you think. Yep. If you think something is simple, you have not examined it closely enough.
Yep.
Like how often do you consider the way in which being an English speaker changes how you approach problems relative to if you only spoke German?
Oh, almost never.
Right. That does matter, though. Yeah. So, fucking everything you do, that's going to matter mm-hmm. to some degree. I don't know how to quantify that, but, like, we don't have those big, gnarly compound words for weird, esoteric thoughts.
Yep. Yep.
And that changes the way we communicate. And that changes the way we communicate philosophy. It's part of the reason Kant's probably such a pain in the ass, amongst many other reasons. But... And that's going to tie into the second one here. Your thoughts and beliefs are not entirely your own. So I do think we are a product of our biology and a product of our experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, those aren't entirely up to us, or really maybe at all up to
us. Sure.
We'll get there. That's the like less useful version of this.
Yeah.
But that's why I went with entirely. Not never. So keep those pinging around your head, I guess, forever, until you die. Think about those every day until you die, because you'll be a better thinker
yeah.
in general. I guess another reason we didn't get here is because I don't like to say things unless I'm pretty sure about it.
Mm-hmm.
And my barometer for being pretty sure about it is quite high.
Yes. Yeah.
We've received feedback that is probably too high.
Yep.
Which I've thought about a lot, a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
Logan should speak more confidently. Something along those yep. lines. You sent me probably 3 months ago now, I would say. Maybe less. Probably thought about that every day. Gotten that feedback a lot in a lot of places. I think it is true. I think it is actionable. I think it's correct. I also think all you fuckers should talk less and should be more sure about things before you open your mouth. Like, I have overcorrected, but I think everyone else needs to kind of revert yeah. towards my position at least somewhat.
A little
here.
Bit, yeah.
If you're getting information from people who never correct themselves or say, I don't know, or admit that they're wrong, those people are lying to you.
Mm-hmm.
Or they don't know, so and they haven't looked, so they don't have to lie about it.
Yes. Yep. That's for every part of your life.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why, like, the more I got slapping stuff on the whiteboard, it was like, a lot of this is just...
It's just life stuff.
Every part of your life stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
So there's our preamble. I assume this preamble has probably taken up the length of an entire standard episode.
It sure has. We are at 54 cool. minutes recorded currently right now.
What do you want to do,
you
Flip?
Pick one?
You want to call it there? You want to pick one? You want to?
Ooh.
Do you want to add to the board? You want to quibble? Do you want to read them out?
I don't
even know if reading them out is useful. I think it's too scattered.
It is a little scattered. I wanna say some of these out loud just because I think that they are. This is an interesting way of thinking about this. So, the ones that are jumping out to me right now are de-skilling. Which I think is interesting.
Yep.
The friction is the point, as associated with existentialism, a thing that I believe wholeheartedly.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one that is really jumping out at me, because we've talked about this a lot, and I think that it is a very interesting discussion that we've had in the past. Everything is vibes.
I do. This is gonna be
which
good.
Is
everything is vibes.
Real good.
Moving towards the non-specific.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna put a couple more on here. You can't see all of the bottom of the board because
this is true.
Aspect ratio things that I have
done. Yep.
So again, ooh, we'll work on the technical side of this as we go.
Embrace failure is good too.
Embrace failure is like, I need to tattoo that under my eyelids, yep, if possible. Like, I think we learn, man, we're gonna spend a lot of time on epistemology doing this.
Hell yeah. That's the only part of philosophy I know. Let's do it.
Yeah. We're gonna do epistemology, we're gonna do some ethics, we're gonna do some other stuff. But yeah, I think you learn by doing a bad job more than you learn by doing a good job.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I could remember the game system. There's a tabletop game. I'll look this up after the fact. We'll find it.
Mm-hmm.
That rewards more experience points when you fail a task,
yeah,
than it does when you complete one. I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
And I think that's... yeah, I think that's more representative of the way we learn things. So part of this is I'm going to be failing in front of all of you, which I am terrified about. I hate everything we've done today.
Yeah. I think it's perfect, though. Like, I bringing it back to the parasocial, but like back to the whole idea that like,
yeah,
like you should be comfortable failing. You should, you know, pursue situations where you can fail and fail forward.
Yeah,
I think that
we have a culture built to not let you do
exactly
that.
And I think that this is something that you and I have talked about a lot when it comes to 70% stuff. And then, you know, it's just kind of a philosophy that I've had in general, is that because we have a show and we have a listenership, mm-hmm, I think that it is important. Mm-hmm. And this is a big brain dad idea. Like this is a thing that is like,
yeah,
because I am a parent, I have like started thinking this way, mm-hmm, but like, I want to model these things for people. Like, I think it is important, yeah, that like, if there is not someone in your life who is willing to stand in front of an audience,
mentorship.
Yep.
Is the word,
yes,
we're looking for.
Yeah, like, I if think someone is not willing to stand in front of an audience and fucking fall flat on their face, then you do not have someone who is making it okay for you to do that. And if we need to be wrong on the internet in a way that is, like, helping everyone around us and ourselves included, like, grow more comfortable doing that, fucking A, that's what I want to do. Like, it sucks, but, like, yeah, I want to.
If you never see things go wrong, then your assumption is either everything is going correct or I am in a state of constant failure.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two like cognitive outcomes that I've reached personally.
Yep.
Either I'm doing everything 100% full, 100% of the way, 100% of the time, or I have failed.
Yep.
And I am only failing 100% of the time, 100% of the
yep
way. And that'll kill you eventually.
Yep.
Maybe fast, maybe slow, but it's not great.
No.
I don't recommend it as a policy. It can be productive. It can be dysfunctional.
Yeah.
It can be functional from the outside.
Yeah.
But I don't think it makes you like a fun person to be around.
No.
Either. And yeah, kind of to your point, like I am not a father. I do not plan to be a father. But I would like to provide mentorship to some degree.
Yeah.
Because people seem to appreciate some of the things I say occasionally.
Yeah.
And
like, I think that's likewise too, right? Like, I think this is also the trap you can fall into when you have a show and when you have an audience is not seeing that works both ways. And I think that we
yeah
do a decent job of listening to feedback and kind of responding as we go. But like, I think that's another.
Oh yeah. We should talk about the proton thing.
We should talk about the proton point thing.
Or right now.
We can talk about it right now.
Proton yeah thing right now. Okay. I'm going to shoot this from the hip too.
Yeah, go ahead.
So someone sent us in a story of the headline was like, proton helps FBI unmask someone tied to something.
Yep.
Specifics not super important. which is like a real bummer headline. So I read about it a little bit. What actually happened was the U.S. government sent the Swiss government a subpoena, who then forwarded that to Proton, who then gave the name tied to the payment information tied to that account.
Yep.
Because that's like how laws work. And if you're going to engage with a company, you're going to have to deal with how laws work somewhere.
Yeah.
So from what I read, and again, please correct me if I'm wrong on this, it was not the contents of the messages. It was not like backtraced VPN information. Mm-hmm. It was payment information tied to an account from a subpoena from their government.
Okay.
And I don't think there's a way around that. In our society, big quotes.
Yeah.
But also, like, email is just, like, an inherently not secure way to do communication.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind. And we also had someone point out that, like, yeah, you're trading one ecosystem for another, which I think is a totally valid critique. Mm-hmm. But we are going to continue to focus on incremental improvement and harm reduction.
Yeah.
And I think, as an ecosystem, I would still prefer Proton over Google currently.
Yeah, I don't think that that's disputed. I think that that makes a lot of sense.
Doing it all piecemeal with open source stuff would be great. I don't have the time or technical ability to move straight from Google runs my life to that endpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Proton's an acceptable midpoint jump for that. Still a bummer. Like,
yeah.
I wish they didn't have to do that.
Yeah, you don't like seeing that.
I think, yeah, they publish stats, I believe, on how often that happens.
Mm.
But, yeah, there's that. So, yeah, don't use email for illegal stuff if you can avoid it.
Bigger point there.
Sometimes you can't, like, and sometimes illegal stuff and, like, legality and morality are not the same.
Yeah.
I will fight anyone on that. And we will touch on that multiple times throughout this process.
Oh, yeah.
But
I wonder which one that falls under. Most of them?
There's no way to know. okay. Where the hell were we? Oh, I was giving you like a couple other.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the ones like hiding underneath here. The microphone here.
Yeah, we have. So we've also been talking about doing like a book club thing with high quality YouTube videos. And that's going to be a part of this. Some of this is also me taking what I see as the benefits I gain from going through higher education and trying to find a way to package that in an accessible manner.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of places do this. Lots of channels do this. My goal is to put together maybe playlists. I don't know. We haven't talked about how this is going to work from like a logistical standpoint. Mm-hmm. But I want to provide longer form sources of information that back up some of my reasoning here.
Yeah.
In a way that's accessible. And also, like, there's incredibly high quality work being done on YouTube. There's also slop garbage for hogs.
Yeah. Yep.
And curating that is a process. And right now we let companies do that primarily. And in the past, they'd done an okay job. In some respects, they still do an okay job. But their goal isn't to teach you true things or make you a better thinker or a more holistic person. Their goal is to get you to keep clicking the thing.
Yep.
So if that's not your goal, if your goal is to not spend unlimited time in an app, think about how you interact with that, I guess.
Yeah.
Because that is their goal. That's their only goal.
Click on the thing, see more ads.
That being said, this I grabbed from a video that you and I have talked about, which we might see. Art is rarely perfect the first time.
Yes. Ooh, what's that from?
That is from the Halix video that I recommended. Defunct Land.
Oh, yes.
Did a documentary on Halix, which how. It's described a couple ways in that video. I'm trying to think. There's one good one, and I've never said it to you. I always come up with bad versions of it to say to you. That time Disney tried to do a Star Wars kiss. That's what it was.
Interesting. Okay.
There's your, like, forward, however many words that was, elevator pitch. But that came from Mike Post of Dun Dun fame. Like, this is
oh, funny.
Law and Order soundtrack writer.
The guy said soundtrack that?
Yes.
That's a really good line.
And it is a really, it's the best thing. He says a lot of things in that rub me the wrong way that we'll get to when we get to the video.
But that one.
And he reminds me very much of a certain director you and I used to work with frequently.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
For good and bad reasons, okay. I think both. But I wouldn't expect this out of our director friend necessarily.
No.
And I was a little surprised to get out of Mike Post. But I don't know that guy. Watched, like, I don't know, cumulatively 7 minutes of conversation on a topic he doesn't really care that much about anymore because he's got better shit to do. So, yeah.
What's the one that's hiding behind you? Well, we'll give the people one last one here, and then we can move on. Oh yeah. Curiosity is the process.
Yeah, curiosity is a verb, I think. It's something you need to actively do. And these are things similar to tying to de-skilling here. Anything you let a chatbot do for you is a skill you've decided you don't need to have anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We did this with like cursive writing and calculators.
Uh-huh.
And that was fine. But now when you go to Google and you type in your little thing, and it burns a bunch of energy to give you a summary that's maybe or maybe not right.
Mm-hmm.
That's lateral research. They provide their little sources at the bottom, which I'm not entirely sure how accurate that is, but they say, look, we grabbed information from these five places and we gave you a paragraph.
Yep.
That is doing lateral research and synthesizing information from that research.
Yep.
I don't think that's a skill you should offload.
Correct.
To anything.
Yeah.
Because that's like what you need to do to function in the world. We unfortunately live in a society of scammers and liars, run currently by scammers and liars.
Yeah.
How much time and energy do you spend in an effort to not get fucked by every interaction in your life outside of like your personal friends?
Mm.
Anytime you have to interact with a business or how many contractors have you contacted? How much time do you spend reading reviews to see if the thing you're going to buy is actually the thing you're going to get? Like the medical system.
Yeah.
How many things do you buy that you don't know how much they cost until you after you've bought it?
Mm-hmm.
What? Like and this is not recent. Like we have long vilified the scammer in this country for hundreds of years. I think I feel comfortable saying. So having a finely tuned bullshit detector, I think, is a good thing. And part of that is doing lateral research. And it's hard. And it's like not that rewarding all the time.
Yeah.
And you're still going to get it wrong. But if you never do it, you've now relinquished that skill. That's gone somewhere else. But you've also let whoever is doing the lateral research for you become a single point of truth for everything.
Yep. And I just,
which is also fraud.
I just really think that Joe Rogan shouldn't be your single source of truth, you know?
Yeah, man, that dude's not putting forth more effort than I am.
Yep.
they just fucking wing it too.
Yeah.
They got a guy who just Googles shit and says the first thing that pops up.
He reads the AI summary now.
Ugh. Does he? Probably. I assume I don't know. I've gotten out of that space. I have spent so much time. I guess, that was the other preamble. I have spent a lot of time listening to liars lie and scammers scam.
Yeah.
Like thousands of hours at this point. And when I see it now, I just don't have the patience for it anymore.
Yeah. It's fair.
Exercise some editorial control, Joe. Fucking hell. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. You wanna dive into one of these, or do you wanna call her there?
Let's call it here. Let's say binary search, the grand reveal of the board.
The board's gonna change because I'm gonna keep thinking about this until I die.
I can't wait.
So
I cannot wait. You're gonna have to get a bigger board.
I might have to get a bigger board. It's got two sides, we just learned.
That's true. It does have two sides.
So that's neat. I probably will erase all of this and rewrite it a little more compactly.
Yeah, we're going to need more space.
I didn't know there was going to be this many things on it. Yeah. I stopped putting things on it when I ran out of space, not when I ran out of things.
Yeah, it's very funny, though, looking at the board and seeing the things that are clearly like related to... like the center of the board says AI in quotation marks, which I appreciate. But then there's clearly some stuff on the bottom here that are... like, why we can't buy hardware. Is this...
that's part of AI.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tech hype bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, all of this stuff, like, that makes sense. Like, hey, this is what we're talking about when we talk about AI. And then I think as you went around the board, we got further and further away from AI the product to AI the concept to kind of intelligence the concept, it seems like, is where you've kind of gone here.
You know, it's tough to say. I didn't write these in order.
No, of course not.
I wrote them like where there was the most space when that idea entered my brain. And this is, it started as a 2D map, and this is actually a three-dimensional map squished into 2D with all of the three-dimensional pieces sheared off.
I cannot wait.
So I need to work on a way to... I was doing little colored symbols and stuff to try to do the 3D, but I didn't like how that was working, and it became kind of tedious. Maybe I'll go back to that. I don't know. I have not landed on a visual representation for this yet.
You're going to make this shit in Blender. We're going to fly through it, like the intro graphics of Cosmos or something.
I mean, if that's a thing you feel comfortable doing... I'll let you, but
I can do bad motion.
I will
graphics.
Not be doing that.
Okay. Well, listen, you have to draw a line somewhere, I guess.
Yeah. I drew a lot of them and they're sloppy. That's part of the problem.
Perfect. Yeah. Let's call it here and we will come back to this, in another episode, several additional episodes, perhaps the rest of the year of episodes.
It could be.
And more.
We'll cycle between this and some more video game stuff.
Yeah.
I don't have anything about probability on here yet. We're going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Now that we're doing board stuff, if we keep doing board work, we're gonna do some RuneScape math at some point.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to talk about drop rates. And I think that'll help people with risk assessment because it's the same thing, just a different context.
Yeah. So, yeah, we have a board. We have video now.
We have a board. We have video at the moment.
At the moment.
Probably. If this works.
Hopefully this works. We'll see.
I'll be real bummed. I fiddled with a lot of knobs. It might not.
All right. Well.
We'll see.
Let's, we'll end her there. And we'll, make something else.
Yeah.
I like this. This is fun. Yeah. And we learned how to do binary research.
I'm glad you like this. I hate
good.
I hate every part of this. I'm going to hate every part of this we do.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to being on the internet.
That's fine. That's fine. It's part of it. The friction is the point.
Exactly. That's a good sign off. We should just end. We begin with tangent is the topic, and then we end with friction is the point. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's our... I'm done with calls to action and all of that.
Yeah.
I don't think it matters anymore.
I don't think so either. All right. Well.
All right. The friction's the point. Good luck, everybody. It's hard out there.
Bye.